Well, you'll want to have your Bible opened to Habakkuk chapter 2. And we're going to be focusing on those words from verse 6 to the end of the chapter. And as we turn to these words in Habakkuk chapter 2, which is page 1430, if you've closed your Bible, I wonder if you ever look an item on your to-do list and feel so overwhelmed by the size of the task that you just don't know where to start with it and just give up. Do you ever have that kind of feeling? Some of you are nodding very vigorously. So you have that kind of day where you think, today is the day I'm going to sort out the cupboard under the stairs. And so you go to the cupboard under the stairs and you open the cupboard under the stairs and you have a look at everything inside the cupboard under the stairs. Then you close the cupboard under the stairs again. Or you have that pile of paper that you have, that one of you certainly has. Part of that pile of paper needs to be filed securely somewhere. Part of it needs to be shredded. And part of it needs to be recycled. And it's going to be a big job to work out which is which. And so you just watch that pile of paper getting bigger and more overwhelming. Or maybe one day you sit down to write a sermon. That's all I've got for you today, so if we could have our closing. So I'm sure you all have this kind of feeling where there are things that seem so overwhelming we don't know where to start with them. And if we have that feeling about cupboards under the stairs, well, how much more about the situations around us in the world that seem so overwhelming? And I think a lot of people are feeling very overwhelmed at the moment. I think back to the fact that last year, Collins Dictionary chose as their word of the year, permacrisis. This word from permanent and crisis, referring to how we're in this ongoing situation, it seems, of instability and chaos and uncertainty. It's just one thing after another, this permanent crisis that we're experiencing that's just so overwhelming. And last year, Oxford also have a word of the year, but they also have a children's word of the year. They asked children to choose a word for the year. The top three words that children chose last year: queen, happy, and chaos. And we'd like to share the optimism of children who chose happy, but even from a young age, children are picking up on the fact that things seem very chaotic and even overwhelming. Where do you start? And for us as Christians, like, we've prayed today for the work of Open Doors, and they recently published their new World Watch List. All of these countries with such serious, violent, awful persecution, all of these people being imprisoned and even killed for their faith. And then that's just one kind of injustice in the world. We're aware of so much else in the world and in our society around us, and we're aware of the sin that's in our lives and the sins of our society, and the huge number of people who need to hear about Jesus, the huge number of people who know nothing about the Bible, who would never come to a church. And you look around at all of that, and where do you start? The Bible calls us as God's people to live for the glory of God, and to be salt and light, live distinctively in this world. Where do we begin with doing that? We look around at all of that, those overwhelming situations. Where do we begin? And will it make any difference? Is there any point? It can be easy to feel overwhelmed in our world, and perhaps it feels especially easy at the moment. But I hope today, as we continue looking through Habakkuk, that this vision that the Lord gives Habakkuk and these words that we're given will give us hope. Hope to keep praying and keep acting, to keep speaking, to keep living for the glory of God, remembering that the Lord has got it all under control, however overwhelming things feel. So let's have a look at Habakkuk, and from verse 6 onwards of chapter 2, where Habakkuk, in one sense, may have felt a bit like he was in a perma-crisis because he had this situation where there was injustice all around him and so many different situations of injustice during the reign of, we assume, King Jehoiakim. And there was so much evil and sin. And he came to the Lord and said, "How long?" And then the Lord seemed to just announce another crisis, that the Babylonians are going to be raised up, and they're going to come and bring destruction and violence everywhere. Just one crisis followed by another crisis. And are the Babylonians just going to get away with it? Is it ever going to end? Where is God in all of this? And the Lord responds, verse 6, with this series of woes. You probably picked up that repeated word as I was reading. It's quite a heavy word, isn't it? Woe, woe, woe. It's quite a long list we get. I think that long list is deliberate. That we're being shown that the Lord sees it all. He sees all of this injustice. He sees all of this sin. He knows about all of it, and he will act. And what we get in this part of chapter 2, we get this series of reversals in the situation of the Babylonians and those who are being oppressed by them. That the Babylonians, who were this arrogant, self-serving power, who are getting more and more powerful, that one day things will change and they will be brought low. And in fact, the way that verse 6 begins, it imagines the nations who've been oppressed by the Babylonians coming to taunt the Babylonians, taking up this taunt with scoffing and riddles. And these words that we're given are the kind of words that they would say as the situation changes and is reversed. But as we go through, we'll also see that this reversal comes at the hand of the Lord. That this is the Lord's work because the Lord is aware, he sees, he knows what's happening, and he will act. And we'll just look at three of the woes, and then you can go home later and look at the other woes if you want to. There are five of them in total. And we'll look at the first one from verse 6 to verse 8. Woe to him who heaps up what is not his own. This picture of this aggressive empire building as the Babylonians keep taking more plunder and more wealth and more territory and more power for themselves, aggressively building their empire. And they seem to be getting away with it. But the Lord knows, he sees. And one day the situation will change and there will be a big reversal and the plunderers will become the plundered. That those who are doing the plundering will themselves be plundered. That's what we're told in verse 8. Because you have plundered many nations, all the remnant of the people shall plunder you. This reversal of positions. And there's something interesting in verse 7 as well. We will not your debtors suddenly arise. And those of you who have in front of you, as I know a few of you do, either an NIV or a New King James, you won't have debtors. I think you'll have creditors. And that's interesting because those are opposite words, aren't they? If you're a debtor, you're not a creditor. You're the opposite. And so what's going on? Well, if you ask the question, which is right? In terms of translation, either could be right. In terms of the experience of the Babylonians, I think they're both true. That they see themselves as the creditor, the one who is getting all this money from people. That the other nations are in debt to them and they're gathering all of this wealth. But actually, in gathering all of this wealth, they're putting themselves into debt. And one day that debt will be called in and they will be brought low, as the other nations suddenly arise against them. And the Babylonians, who thought that they were in credit, discover they were actually all along in debt. The Lord is aware of their aggressive empire building and he will act. Now let's look at the third woe from verse 12 to verse 14, where we see this kind of ruthless pursuit of glory by the Babylonians. Woe to him who builds a town with blood and founds a city on iniquity. Babylonians building these towns and these monuments, showing off their greatness. As the Lord looks at those towns and those monuments, he doesn't see the amazing architecture. He doesn't see the amazing, impressive achievements of the Babylonians in building them. What he sees is blood. He sees the lives that have been sacrificed in the building of these cities. Both the blood of slaves who perished in the work of building, and the blood of those who were thrust aside in the Babylonians' ruthless pursuit of power. The Lord sees that blood, and he will act. Behold, verse 13, is it not from the Lord of hosts that peoples labour merely for fire and nations weary themselves for nothing? These great monuments that they're building will be burned up, and that will be the Lord's doing. The Lord sees and he will act. And we'll look at the next woe from verse 15 to verse 17. As we see their violent exploitation of other people. Woe to him who makes his neighbours drink. You pour out your wrath and make them drunk in order to gaze at their nakedness. This image of getting people drunk in order to take advantage of them, which may have been literally happening, but is also an image. An image of the Babylonians treating people just as objects to be used and exploited and manipulated for their own purposes. And as they make these other nations drunk to gaze at their nakedness, for the Lord sees all of that and he will act. And one day there will be this great reversal when the Babylonians themselves drink. And they drink in verse 16, the cup in the Lord's right hand, which will come around to you, and utter shame will come upon your glory. So where Habakkuk is asking, well, are the Babylonians going to get away with this? Is this ever going to end? The Lord shows that yes, there will be this great reversal, and the Babylonians, who were so filled with a sense of their own glory, will be brought low. The Lord is aware, he sees, he knows, and he will act. Which is good news for Habakkuk and good news for other people who are waiting for the Lord to act. And it's good news for us as well. And where we are now, Babylon has fallen, as the Lord said, that we no longer face the threat of the Babylonians. That's not an issue in our world anymore. But the problem of injustice remains, doesn't it? That the Babylonians fell, just as the Lord said. Then you get the Babylonians followed by the Persians, and then you get the Greeks, and then you get the Romans. And all of those empires were guilty of the same kinds of things that we read about in different ways. And that's not just ancient history. We look at our own world now, and you think about the brutal oppression in North Korea. You think about the violence committed by Russia, the atrocities against Ukraine. You think about the human rights abuses in China. You think about dozens of other countries I could name. This is still an issue. And that's before you get to the smaller scale abuses, people abusing their positions and power in homes and in workplaces and in society, and injustice that we see in so many different places. There are two verses in this chapter that show us the bigger picture of God's plans, that show us that these words are good news not just for Habakkuk facing the Babylonians, but us in a world with so many injustices. two verses that you may have wondered why I haven't commented on them so far, because they're the most well-known verses in this chapter, the two verses that, as I was reading along, some of you are thinking, yes, that's a really great verse, the sort of verses that you would want to memorize if you're doing memory verses. You probably wouldn't memorize verse 13 of this chapter, but you may well have memorized verse 14. That's one of the glorious verses. The earth will be filled with the knowledge of the glory of the Lord as the waters cover the sea. Wonderful words, and similar to something Isaiah says in chapter 11. The Babylonians, obsessed with their own glory and these monuments to their glory and their greatness, well, that glory and greatness will fade away. All of that work they've put into making a name for themselves will all come to nothing. But the glory of the Lord, the greatness of the Lord, his name, will be seen and known. And that was true in the fall of the Babylonians, in that the Lord showed his greatness and his glory. But the Bible points us beyond that day to a day that's still coming, when we'll see even more fully the truth of these words, when the earth will be filled with the knowledge of the glory of the Lord as the waters cover the sea. The greatness, the glory, the name of the Lord, seen and known across the world as the waters cover the sea. I don't know if you've ever been to the sea, but quite a high percentage of the sea is covered with water. Have you noticed that? If you go down to Ogmore this afternoon, and go down to the beach there, I think you probably have to pay for parking now again, but it would be worth it to get this glimpse of glory. So you go down to Ogmore, you look at the sea, see if you can find a bit of the sea that isn't covered with water. And if you find a bit of the sea that isn't covered with water, that's not the sea, that's an island. The whole of the sea covered with water, just as the whole of the earth will be filled with the knowledge of the glory of the Lord. And that's good news because of what we've sung today. In fact, what we've just sung before I started speaking, that this is the one who's the Holy One. In him no sin is found. He's the radiant King of light. This is the one who'll be seen and known across the whole earth. He's the one who comes to cleanse and to heal. The earth will be filled with the knowledge of the glory of the Lord as the waters cover the sea. And then there's the other verse at the end of the chapter, verse 20. The Lord is in his holy temple. Let all the earth keep silence before him. The Babylonians, looking to these idols that they had made with their hands, these bits of metal and stone and wood. And those idols weren't any help to them. You could shout at them to wake up and they wouldn't wake up. It'd be like shouting at one of these chairs to wake up. You can shout all day, the chair will not wake up. But unlike those idols, the Lord is in his holy temple. The Lord is alive. He sees, he knows. Though the nations rage, kingdoms rise and fall, there is still one king reigning over all, because the Lord is in his holy temple. And let all the earth keep silence before him, because no one can challenge his rule or his position or his power. The only response is to worship. One day, the Lord will bring full justice, final justice. He'll bring an end to all injustice and violence and destruction and sin. One day the earth will be completely filled with the knowledge of the glory of the Lord as the waters cover the sea. And that will happen because the Lord is in his holy temple. He sees, he knows, and he will act. Good news when we're feeling overwhelmed. Except, there's one big problem that we haven't dealt with yet. There's a big problem in being encouraged with these words. That when I look at these woes of this chapter, woe, 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 I realise that my hands aren't entirely clean. I haven't built any empires recently. I haven't built any towns either with or without blood. I haven't plundered any nations, let alone many nations. But these self-seeking attitudes that we have here, I recognize that in my heart. And so if I'm asking God to one day bring complete, final, full justice, where does that leave me? That for all of us, we may not have plundered many nations. In fact, we haven't plundered many nations. But we're very capable of taking advantage of other people, aren't we? Of pursuing our own agendas without much concern for the impact it will have on those around us. Of showing unjust favouritism when it suits us. We're capable of doing those things in our families, in workplaces, in our societies, in church. And it's very easy to criticise the governments in China and North Korea for their injustice, but then to turn a blind eye to injustice when it means we can get a better deal at the checkout and cheaper goods. It's very easy to condemn modern slavery, but then to visit websites that fuel sex trafficking. It's very easy to mock people making metal idols, while all the while putting lots of other things in the place of God, and my own heart, in my own life. If we ask God to bring full and final justice, what does that mean for me? What's that mean for us? The words to the Babylonians, the cup in the Lord's right hand will come around to you. That's what we deserve, to drink the cup of God's anger, the cup of God's wrath, the cup of God's judgment for our sin, for our share in the injustice in this world. And in light of that, there's only one way that this chapter can be good news for us. There's only one way that these words can be good news for us today. And that's when we look to Jesus. God showed his glory and his greatness in the fall of the Babylonians, as he has done at many other times in history. He shows his glory and his greatness even more clearly on a wooden cross 2,000 years ago, where God the Son drank that cup of God's anger that we deserve. Facing that punishment that we deserve for our part in the injustice of this world, for our sin against God and against others. He drank that cup and faced that punishment so we don't have to. That's the glorious news of the gospel, where God's glory and greatness is revealed. That Jesus drank that cup for us. So that now, when Jesus returns, as he will do one day soon, we can be confident that he won't turn away from us in judgment, but will welcome us in. Welcome us to share in that eternity where the earth will be filled with the knowledge of the glory of the Lord as the waters cover the sea. That renewed creation where we can spend the whole of eternity delighting in knowing God. Free from our own sin and injustice around us, free from death, free from tears. That's the hope we can have in Jesus. And that's the only way we can have real hope in this overwhelming world. The only way we can have hope of justice being done without us being crushed is through Jesus. And if that hope isn't yours, you can come to Jesus today. In fact, you need to come to Jesus to share in this glory, this hope. Come to Jesus admitting, as we all need to admit, that you have sinned. Thanking him that he died in your place for your sin, taking that punishment that we deserve. Asking that he would forgive you and he'd give you this hope for yourself. And if you're not quite sure what that exactly that would look like, I'm very happy to speak to you afterwards, or you can get in touch with us through our website, or you can come and on our Hope Explored course and learn more about this hope. That's the vital question today, about whether we have this hope. And if we do, then I hope that these words of Habakkuk today can give us hope and encouragement to keep living for the glory of God in this overwhelming world. The words that came to mind as I was preparing this week were words that Paul says at the end of 1 Corinthians 15, talking about the resurrection, and he finishes by saying, "Be steadfast, immovable, always abounding in the work of the Lord, knowing that in the Lord your labour is not in vain." In the Lord, our labour is not in vain. Why not? Because the Lord is in his holy temple. He sees and he knows and he will act. And it's not in vain because the earth will be filled with the knowledge of the glory of the Lord as the waters cover the sea. And as we remember that, we can keep taking steps of trust and obedience, even when we wonder what the point is, or wonder what difference it will make, or wonder how we're going to keep going in this overwhelming world. We can keep looking to God and trusting. And if we're wondering, well, where can I start with praying for the problems of this world? Where do I start with praying for all of the problems of this world? Why don't we just start with one prayer and just pray with hope, knowing that the Lord is in his holy temple and the earth will be filled with the knowledge of the glory of the Lord. Or if you think, where do I start with challenging injustice in this world? Well, just start with one act of repentance, an act with hope, knowing that the Lord is in his holy temple and the earth will be filled with the knowledge of the glory of the Lord. Or if we're wondering, where do we start with speaking about Jesus when there are so many who don't know him? Just start with one conversation and speak with hope, because the Lord is in his holy temple and the earth will be filled with the knowledge of the glory of the Lord as the waters cover the sea. Even in the darkest times, in the most overwhelming times, Habakkuk shows us how we can have a hopeful faith, how we can be steadfast, immovable, always abounding in the work of the Lord, knowing that in the Lord our labour is not in vain. Let me pray.